You're listening to Face Off, episode 15, recorded Friday, April 24th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes at faceoffshow.com or follow us via Twitter at twitter.com/faceoffshow. All right, Mark. So we have a couple announcements, first of all, on the show. Not really announcements, just some clarifications that we want to let people know about. Such as our release schedule. So, Mark, what is our release schedule?
We release every week at Tuesday. The feed comes out about 5 a.m. Is it Pacific time?
It's technically 3 o'clock Mountain Time.
3 o'clock a.m. Mountain Time on Tuesday.
Yeah. And so our goal is there that hopefully it'll get out early enough that, you know, everyone starts up their computer and maybe their favorite podcatcher will kind of grab it and download it by the time they wake up and go to work or whatever.
Yeah, so that when they're commuting to work or whatever, they can grab it and listen to it on the way. And then we record. Would you want? I mean, we record every other week or so. We do about two episodes.
We have a 2 week recording schedule. We do 2 weekends where we record in a row. We record 2 episodes per weekend, and then we take 2 weekends off. It's usually, you know, Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday that we record. And if you follow us on Twitter, we try to announce it ahead of time, you know, like a half an hour, so that if you want to watch it live, you can go to our website and actually watch us record. Which we're doing right now. And sadly, because we don't have a camera for you, all these poor saps can see is my ugly mug the whole time we're recording. So it's kind of depressing. I feel bad for them, but,
there goes my phone.
You know, there goes your phone, and you know, professionalism right out the window, Mark. It's killing me. So let's dig into the show, right? So we have one news piece that we kind of want to announce and talk about, and it is that Google Analytics has an API. This I'm really excited about because I mean, I just love APIs in general. I don't know about you, but Google Analytics is a great tool, anyways.
Yeah, I've actually been waiting for the Analytics API for the longest time. Like, I was like wondering when Google would actually do something like this, and out of nowhere, I didn't hear any news about it. It was all of a sudden, no, we've got an API.
Yeah, I didn't hear any sort of like, you know, premonitions about it or anything. So all I know is, one day you were like, oh, I'm gonna get my analytics stuff via Python, and I was like, what? So.
I mean, Google has APIs for pretty much everything they do right now. You can do book searches, spelling. Suggestions. You can do a Picasa. They've got an API for that. Their Google Checkout's got an API. I mean, pretty much everything they do except analytics, which is why I was like, this is awesome that they finally got an API for analytics.
Yeah. And I mean, it allows you to do, I mean, there are certain things that I thought about, like, why isn't there an iPhone app for analytics?
You know, because they don't have an API.
Because they didn't have an API. Well, now, I mean, we already saw today earlier there was an announcement of an Adobe Air app that uses the Analytics API. So that's great. I mean, you don't have to go to their website. I mean, if you want to dig into it, probably. But other than that, you can just kind of go and make your own apps and do your own thing with it.
The other thing they say that's probably going to end up coming out of this is probably like mashups of multiple sites, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's right now there's multiple accounts for, you know, jaderobbins.com, Face Off Show, you know, Montana Fragfest. And with this API, I could literally just combine them all together to see, you know, my traffic as a whole for all my properties.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. I mean, kudos to Google. Now I'm just waiting for a Feedburner API because that is long overdue, I think.
They don't have one?
Not that I know of.
And I'd like to say, I mean, it's basically like the other APIs. It uses XML. It's pretty easy to use. I've already written something for Python that doesn't really do a whole lot other than contact it and check your profiles. but it's easy enough to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really simple. I mean, there probably already has to be a Perl library out there for it. I saw a couple. Already.
Well, actually, that's the other thing I wanted to mention is they have a Google code, project that works with all the other APIs that they have.
Mm-hmm.
That's done in Python, and the only downside is they don't have analytics yet, but I'm sure they'll have it as
Oh yeah, of course.
A week or two.
Yeah, I mean, I've already seen a couple of PHP plugins and whatnot that came out of it. So it should be coming, and that's really exciting. The more APIs, the better. I just like being able to sort of customize the way I do it. And as a person that maybe like might be doing some contract web work or whatnot, it allows you, again, to say, I mean, sometimes you feel dirty being like, well, I signed us up for, even like analytics is a great one where you're like, people are like, well, I want comprehensive sort of, you know, stats on my website and stuff. And you're like, well, I'm going to sign you up for Google Analytics. And you feel a little less professional because you're not creating your own application. Well, this way you can use the power of Google and sort of, if you wanted to, even sneak it into your back end or your dashboard that you're building for them anyways, without them ever even having to know a Google username and password. I mean,
yeah, it's great. I mean, and the other thing is, like, somebody might make something you've never even thought of. We see this a lot with the Twitter API, like Tweetree, you know, all these mm-hmm. all these different apps that come out because of an API.
Yeah.
So it's worth a company doing, you know, putting out an API.
Yeah, there's going to be some wicked analytics Google Maps mashups going on. I can see in the future. So
yeah, and then like you said, iPhone apps. Yeah. That's going to be big.
I would love it.
Download that as soon as it comes
out. Exactly. I mean, you and I, you use AdSense because you like, because you're a money grubber, of course. Well, you're always thinking of the money.
The reason I like AdSense as opposed to analytics, just for a real quick estimate of what's going on, is that, first of all, AdSense is a little bit more real time than analytics.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is you can have like what they're going to have with the API is you can have multiple sites. Like I can see all of my sites in one page.
It's well not more... It's not more real time. It's just that by default, Google Analytics shows you the traffic up to the previous day.
Analytics is not up to the minute.
Yeah, it is.
It is?
If you select today, if you specifically select today, it will be up to the minute.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
And then the other thing about AdSense is you can, if you put an ad in your feed, you can actually see how many people are looking at your feed as well. So you can kind of see everything in one spot. Mm,
yeah.
If you're not putting ads on your site, you're not. I mean, it's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, exactly. But and anyways, so I mean, but we basically, the whole point is we live by our stats throughout the day. I mean, if I could have it in a small app, or you know, if somebody could SMS me my you know, traffic for the day at the end of the day or something, that'd be great. So
yeah, and that's gonna happen with the API. You'll be able to do that.
There'll be some cool stuff. So kudos to Google. Thank you for that. We appreciate it. Let's do some web apps.
All right. What's the next thing we got?
The first web app that we're going to talk about is called What the Font. So what is What the Font, Mark?
This is a service where you can... let's say you get a design for somebody. You take a screenshot, you like it, or maybe it's something you just found on your, you know, an old design you did from a long time ago and you want to, you know, continue with it or something and you have no idea what font it was. What you can do is you can take a font... and basically take an image of that font and upload it to What the Font, and it will try to tell you what it is.
That's very cool.
It's very handy. I mean, if it tells you what the font of it is. Yeah. There's no other service like that. You know, there's nothing else that I know of.
Well, I found, I don't know the address, but there was a similar service a long time ago, or not a long time ago, but I had to use where instead of uploading an image and finding the font, it asked you questions about the font, and in the end would give you results based on that. Like, you would say, does it have serif or does it not have serif? Does it have, you know, thick accents? Does it not? Does it have, you know, does the A character have a trailing tail, you know? And based on that, it would give you, you know, a selection of like 10 fonts that it thinks it is.
Hmm.
So I can't remember. I'll have to look for it and try and throw it in the show notes. But, I mean, this is actually a lot easier because the other one was kind of, a 10-question questionnaire, and this, you just upload the image and it kind of figures it out for you. Is it best approximation?
It takes characters and tries to recognize things, I think is how it works. I'm not sure.
And then probably does like a statistical sort of analysis on it. Like this font that we have on file is like 96% similar.
It was really close when I tried it. So I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. We should do some tests where we take like really obscure fonts and make an image. And then see if it can find it or something. That'd be interesting. But What the Font, the world of typography is something that's really opened up to me in the past couple.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the last year, I sort of just would use basic fonts and try and use other ways to highlight them. But, I mean, if you can find a really good, unique font, it can really spruce up your website and give you some identity. I mean, you can't use it a lot, obviously, in a website because you can't, easily embed the font yet without using images, and everything can't be an image. But
yeah, I was like kind of like, you know, Times New Roman, Arial, you know, that's it. You know, I didn't know that there's professional fonts out there that like what is it, Trajan or something. There's one where the movie posters, it's like 80% of the movie posters use this font. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain fonts that are, you know. So it was open my world to typography. Yeah.
A lot of graphic designers spend a lot of time designing fonts, and it's pretty cool. I was really excited when I got my tablet PC, I remember, because it has an application that allows you to create your own font based off of your handwriting. And one of my coworkers, Tig, he was so excited that he like threw it his font on his blog. And even though he was the only one that could view it, he had like a link at the top that was like, if you want to see the blog the way it should be in my handwriting, download this font. And it was just, it looked so silly because it was like a piece of paper and it looked like his handwriting because it was his handwriting. It was funny. Really? Yeah, he was really excited about that.
But now with CSS3, he could embed his own font on there.
Is that ironclad in CSS3?
No, it's a proposed thing, I think.
Yeah,
proposed feature.
We talked about this
it's
before.
It's definitely not supported.
There's a lot of hangups about that because, what if you buy a professional font, costs like $10,000, and you embed it? You know, I mean, there has to be some ways for them to figure it out, but it's going to be tough, I think.
Maybe it has to be a free font.
Maybe it has to be a free font. All right, let's move on to our next web app, Dropbox. So,
I was really excited when I got this.
Yeah.
Basically, what it is it's an upload service to where an online storage service. But you know, I mean, they've had online storage services for a long time. Mm-hmm. The thing I guess is unique about this is it syncs incrementally. I mean, it's everything that you'd want in, you know, a storage solution. It increments automatically. It's cross-compatible. It works with Mac, Windows, Linux.
Yeah.
It's super easy. One of the cool features I saw is you can right-click on a file and say share, and it'll actually just give you a URL you can just throw out there, and somebody else can download your files.
Oh. So I'm going to interrupt you.
If it's in the public folder.
I'm going to interrupt you 1 second because this is exciting. One of our live viewers in the chat room has told us what the app was. It's called Identifont.
No way.
It's the thing where it'll ask you questions about your font and tell you about it in the end. So thank you, Kalu. We appreciate it. Identifont. I apologize.
So this is the one where it asks you questions?
Yeah, you kind of say like, oh, it's this kind of font, this kind of font. And then through the power of deduction, it tells you what it is. So
awesome.
That's exciting. Live viewers helping us out.
Yeah.
Making us smarter.
Awesome.
Okay, back to Dropbox. I apologize.
Okay. The link that you can share, you can right click on a folder if it's in your public, or right click on a file if it's in your public folder, and it says like something like share this link or something, or share this file, and then it gives you a link, which you can then copy and paste, throw in an IM email, even throw it on your website. I mean, anywhere. Yeah.
Okay, so let me break it down. It's like, I have 12 computers, a couple Windows ones, a couple Mac ones, a couple Linux ones. And if I install Dropbox and connect my Dropbox account on each of those, I have a little Dropbox folder that is the same across all of them. It's constantly looking for changes. So if you change a file or add a file to your Dropbox, it immediately sends it out to the server, which then sends it to all your other computers. So like I have a work laptop, and I was getting kind of frustrated with the fact that sometimes I would go home and like someone would send me an email like, hey, I need this file that you were, and I was like, oh, great. Well, it's at work and I can't connect to it remotely because I'm not using the next app that we're talking about at work. What can I do? Well, with this now, it's like I go home and I go to my Dropbox on my home computer, and there's all the files that I had in my Dropbox at work, and I go to my laptop and there's all the files, and it keeps them synced and up to date so that you don't have to keep everything on a USB stick on your key and kind of carry it around with you, or try and keep the files up to date and versioned yourself by emailing it to yourself a different time each day. It does it for you. And it's all stored. We talked about this. They actually use the Amazon S3 service for this. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's very mature, actually. I mean, it works. Everything works the way you'd expect it.
Mm-hmm.
It has rate limiting. You can limit, because some people might be concerned. I don't want it, uploading these huge files. If you do have actually a huge file, they don't want them uploading this huge file when they're in the middle of their work or whatever. Cool things you can do with it. I mean, you can sync bookmarks. You can have a synced folder. You can have bookmarks across all of your browsers.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's services probably even an extension that probably does that. But it's something you can do with it.
No, yeah. One thing you and I were talking about was I'm really picky about my Bash RC and my Vim RC file in Linux. And like what you could do is just symlink the Bash RC in your home directory to wherever your Dropbox is. You know, if you don't want your Dropbox to be your home directory. And then, you know, if you change it on another computer, it gets synced all between them. And then,
does it follow symlinks?
Well, no, I mean, it doesn't have to follow symlinks because you, in your home directory, you symlink to the actual file in the Dropbox. The Dropbox doesn't even have to know about it. It looks just like a file system.
So the actual file's in Dropbox and you symlink.
Yeah, because you want the actual file to be the one that's consistent across all version. And then you just, in your home directory, you symlink to where your VimRC should be. Then you have a consistent, you know, VimRC file or any other config file you might have in your home directory right there.
Yep.
We were trying to think of a sort of homebrew solution for this at work, and I think I'm going to try it with Dropbox now. Just say, you
definitely
know, screw it.
I actually put my VimRC and Bash RC in Dropbox in case I am at a new computer and I want to configure it real quick. But
yep,
your solution, that is way better.
Yeah, that works too. Yeah. Another thing, first 2 gigs free.
Yep.
I mean, it's amazing. It's
forever.
Free.
Like if there's no trial, it's just, you get 2 gigs for free.
Yeah. There's no functionality deficiency except for if you go over 2 gigs, you have to pay.
And if you refer someone, you get 250 megabytes for everyone you refer up to 3 gigs.
Yeah.
Free.
So. I mean, that's crazy. That's awesome. It's an awesome service. 2 gigs free. And I just wouldn't store big files on this anyways. I want just kind of like little piddly documents that I'm working on or config files and stuff. I have no need for big files on these at all.
I mean, otherwise it's going to be uploading all the time anyways.
Yeah.
But it does do incremental updates. So if you have a big file and you just change a little thing in it, it only updates that little thing.
That's
it syncs
great.
It up. So it's like rsync. And it's encrypted with AES on their servers.
No way.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot like something we just did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark and I actually just got done finishing a sort of offsite backup solution for us, which a lot of people recommend Amazon S3 for offsite backup because it's really cheap and it's what Dropbox uses. But one thing that we do is sort of the same thing. We use rsync and AES encryption so that Mark can't see my files on his computer. He just sees a big kind of lumped encrypted file and everything. So actually, we'll put the link to that in the show notes. It was on Mark's website that he talked about how to do that. But this is a very elegant solution, and it's backed by, you know, a company that's going all the way. It's not kind of, you know, a little homebrew thing that you and I came up with.
Yeah, and it's if you're thinking to yourself, well, I've tried online solutions before, because I mean they've been around since like 2000.
Yeah, I mean none of them have ever been really good.
This is very unique. It's very polished.
Yeah, I've never seen as many IT professionals as I have say that Dropbox is good and they like it and use it.
So. Well, it's probably one of the first ones that's actually cross-compatible. Like, a lot of them were all Windows only.
Yeah.
Mac, you know, Windows and Mac.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't really want to support each other at all.
When I say it's integrated Linux, they have a command line, you know, version, and as well as it's integrated Nautilus.
Yeah.
Which is the GNOME, you know, file browser.
Yeah. So really cool.
Very integrated, very polished.
Check it out. I think Dropbox is a great app, you know, especially if you have a lot of computers like you and I do. I mean, we're definitely never tied to one computer at all. So check it out. Dropbox, great app.
All right. The next one we got LogMeIn. Why don't you give us a little basic intro on this one?
Well, one thing we were talking about earlier a little bit was the ability to control your computer remotely. There's been a lot of solutions out there to do this for a long time, like you know, remote desktop connection for Windows, you know, there's Apple remote desktop, VNC, you know, what is it, XDMCP or whatever in Linux is kind of a way to do it. But none of them really cross-talk to each other or anything like that. Well, LogMeIn, there's a lot of other ones that do this right now, like GoToMyPC and stuff, but I've kind of stuck with LogMeIn because I think they're a really good company and their basic service is free and it's really useful. So what it does is allow you to connect and control your computer like your remote desktop on your computer through the web via a web interface.
Okay.
So I go to LogMeIn, you know, I go to my computer, I set up LogMeIn on it, and then wherever I am on any computer, I go to logmein.com and I go in and it just shows me all my computers that are currently connected to LogMeIn and I just click on them and then I can control my desktop from there.
Awesome. I know GoToMyPC does this and, you know, it's Cisco ran and it's a decent service, but it is paid. This one's free.
Yeah, so. I mean the basic service on this one is free, and the truth is I just haven't used GoToMyPC very much, and
I've
heard used LogMeIn for a long time, so I feel safe recommending it to people. Like one thing I did with it was I set it up on my sister's computer because she was calling me all the time, and I'm trying to answer tech questions over the phone, and I hate that. I just hate it. So I set up, you know, log me in on her computer. Actually, I talked her how to set up log me in.
Really?
Know.
Remotely? It wasn't that bad?
Yeah, it was really awesome. Easy. And then all of a sudden her computer was in my list. I click on it and ask her for, you know, it's like I have to put in, you have to log into your LogMeIn account. Plus then you have to log in the login credentials for the computer itself. So you can't just, you know, connect to someone's stuff without knowing their username and password. And then I fixed her computer and it was awesome. I was so glad. I was so tired of trying to explain stuff over the phone.
Didn't these guys used to be Hamachi?
They didn't used to be Hamachi. They bought Hamachi.
Oh, okay.
And that's another reason I use it and I recommend it because
we used
Hamachi. I know a lot of other people that have used Hamachi for a long time. Hamachi is an awesome product. So part of the LogMeIn suite that you can pay for if you want is a Hamachi component. But the best part about this is if you ever did any remote control of your computer in the past, it was like, okay, I need to forward the VNC port on my router, which means anyone can get to it. This does sort of virtual private networking for you. You know, it's no questions asked.
I was just going to mention, I guess. In the past, you'd use something like VNC or even Windows has one built-in remote desktop. Mm-hmm. And they're great services. You can connect to them, just type in the IP and the port. But the problem is we now have – most people are behind routers, mm-hmm. and the routers have the feature called NAT, you know, Network Address Translation. What it means basically is you're not on the network with your actual computer, and so you have to do goofy things like port forwarding, like you said. And what's great about LogMeIn is they do NAT traversal is what it's called, where it just basically does all that stuff for you. You don't have to mess around with it. Yeah. Basically, your computer connects to LogMeIn, and then you connect to LogMeIn, and then LogMeIn creates that link between it.
Yeah.
So it makes everything really simple.
Yeah. I mean, we used Hamachi, and a lot of people do, for gaming, mm-hmm. because, you know, it according to your computer, it just looks like another local area network. It's really seamless. It's great.
Like a VPN.
Yeah, so and being that these guys bought it and I've used them for a long time, I think this would be the service that I would recommend to people. If you wanted to pay for services, I would suggest checking out people like go to MyPC. They've been around for a long time as well, doing good stuff. But as far as basic free stuff, this is what I've used, and I think if you're interested in it, try it out.
They have an iPhone app too.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
So I could control my computer from my iPhone. Wow. My iPod Touch. That's awesome.
Crazy.
Yeah, check them out. Great company. I've been really happy with them. We even, where I worked for a while there, we were kind of talking with them about trying to use them as a sort of enterprise solution for controlling all our computers and our computer labs and stuff. So really helpful guys. Good products. I think I'd recommend them to just about anybody.
I actually forgot about Hamachi, so I'm going to actually try it out again.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot about this.
Yeah, I hope. See, the big hang-up for me for Hamachi for the longest time was it was really hard to get working on Linux. It was really picky. So hopefully that's
matured.
You had
matured. To install the TunTap driver.
Yeah.
And in some distros, you actually had to change the kernel, recompile the kernel. I remember that.
It was not good. So hopefully they sorted that out. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they sorted that out. We should check out Hamachi again. I tend to game on the internet now, not with people I know, because I don't really...
With networks like Steam and stuff, people can connect to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really easy, so I don't know. But log me in, check it out. Let's move on.
What do we got next?
All right, Gliffy. The next web app I want to talk about is a little web app called Gliffy. I've used Gliffy quite a bit. So what got my interest started in Gliffy again was I started using OmniGraffle at work, which is like a really good diagramming software. And but it's expensive. It's good and it costs money. So I remember that I tried Gliffy a while ago, and I thought it was a really good app. So I thought I'd share people. I'd share it with everybody. Gliffy is basically a way to make like flow charts or UML diagrams or even like floor plans in your house for like quick designer things and whatnot. It's really easy to use. I mean, it's not, OmniGraffle has some really cool stuff that doesn't quite translate to the web as well as you would hope, but, I think Gliffy is a really good approximation, especially for the web.
Okay. So it looks like you can do, like ER diagrams, flow charts, I mean, have you done some of the, I mean, is it kind of like, what was it, Visio or whatever?
Yeah, it's basically a web version of that. It's kind of a, this ambiguous diagramming program category. OmniGraph is the same way. You know, you do flowcharts, UMLs, but then you can also do like layouts and stuff. So I don't know what you'd call those kind of programs. It's kind of like generic drawing programs, but you know, it's got good things like you run a line to one and it kind of right. snaps in magnetically and will follow it as you drag it around. So, you know,
I've actually seen people do this stuff in Word.
Oh, yeah.
And then they realize that they don't have enough room or something, so they have to move everything.
And you got
to
move every little.
And I'm like, I show them like something like Dia. Or however, Dia, whatever, which is an open source drawing program like this for the desktop. They just flip out. They're like, oh my God, can drag stuff with the arrows. You know?
It just makes your world so much easier.
This looks nice. I mean, can you export as PDF or any of that stuff?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Okay. I think in the free version, it may put like a watermark in the corner. But it works really well.
You know, I've been eyeballing this Red Bull Cola. I'm going to have to open it up here. We drank one.
You just broke the flow, Mark.
Sorry, I just opened up this.
Actually, as another like sort of side note and attachment, we actually contacted Red Bull Cola, and they're actually going to send us some free stuff. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it.
Yeah, it is. If you haven't tried it, you're thinking Red Bull, you're probably thinking no energy drink. It's actually like all natural. It's like a different. It's not an energy drink. It's just a cola. But they use all natural ingredients, like you know, they say, instead of saying like just
juice.
Caffeine, it says like, you know, caffeine from coffee.
Yeah, beans, and like instead of a bunch of sorbates and
mustard seed and
benzoates and stuff, it's actually like seeds. So check it out.
I don't know. It's different. It doesn't taste the same as a.
We forgot to open them before the show started, though, and so we've been kind of both staring at our sodas for a while. But
It looks like it does floor plans on this.
Back
thing,
to Gliffy.
Too.
Yeah, it's these diagramming softwares that kind of do the same thing.
Dia doesn't do floor plans, I don't think. That's pretty.
I'm sure you can get a stencil set for it to do probably. It. You know, it's. But another cool thing that Gliffy does is revisions. It keeps revisions of your edits, and you can share it with other people collaboratively and have them edit it as well. So it's, you know, you can't do things like that with OmniGraffle or Dia at all. So, you know, I could share this with you. You can log in, edit it. You know, we can
That's
kind
nice.
Of, you know, yeah, exactly.
I guess what you could do with Dropbox is you could share like a Dia, you know, but it's not as convenient. It's throwing a URL out.
Yeah, exactly.
With an actual app that they can go to and edit it.
Yeah.
Can you collaborate?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can collaborate. And that's why, and it keeps a nice revision history, so I could see like the changes that you made since last time I made changes, and it'll actually show me the difference between them.
Cool.
And it's, I mean, the other thing is, I remember trying this, and I was like, this is web-based. This is awesome. I think people have done a great job with making these web apps that are slowly, taking over functionality that we've traditionally done solely with actual desktop applications.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, adding, you know, valued features like collaboration. So you, looking at it, you can export as SVG, JPEG, or another file. But let me open this up real quick. PNG. So it's a cool application. The one thing you can't do that you can do with things like OmniGraffle or Visio is you can import stencil sets. So if you find a very specialized one, you can import it and use it. You're kind of stuck with what these guys have. But it's a great program. I would recommend it for anybody. And, you know, it's one of those things that they want you to pay for it. And I understand it because I think it's a really great application. But they have, you know, I think it's like you get X number of documents and then you can't make any more. So it doesn't really remove a whole lot of functionality. But if you use it a lot, you might as well. And collaborate.
It actually looks a lot like Visio. And if you're using Visio, I mean, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, I know when I used OmniGraffle at work, basically my coworker came over to my desk and kind of sat and we worked on it together. But so, I could use Gliffy
so
and
this
we
one's,
could collaborate on it, you know.
So this one's not totally free. It's just like a trial then?
It's
or is it
It's free. It's just you can only have so many documents. You can't.
So it's like MindMeister.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can use it as long as all you want, as long as you only have this a certain amount of documents saved.
Yeah. Okay. Like I logged in. I've been using. I opened my Gliffy account a long time ago, actually.
And, you're still...
and I looked, and there's a document I did 2 years ago.
Awesome. Cool.
So you know, it's good stuff. I really like it. And I think that, you know, people should
well,
try
that. That and you don't, I mean, if you're like, hey, we need to do a flowchart real quick, you don't have to go and install software. You don't, you know, you don't have to monkey around with that.
Yeah, exactly. See, look, it's a flowchart I made. An org chart.
Nice.
Pretty good. Check it out. Gliffy, it's a great program. I think, especially now that I've used a really professional one, such as OmniGraffle, and I have used Gliffy in the past, I didn't feel like the really expensive software of something like Gliffy really added that much that this program doesn't. And this is a lot cheaper.
Okay.
So check it out. All right, Mark. Let's move on to some topics. That was our web apps for the week. So the first one we have is a little article you found called The Ultimate Website Launch Checklist. So what is the deal with this?
Well, I recently launched a website, and I kind of Googled, you know, checklist launch thing, and I was like, man, this thing is like got everything. So let's kind of go through it a little bit and do both of our takes on some of these things. So the first one is spelling and grammar. This one's a big one. You know, you gotta check that stuff. We talked about an app, spellrus.com, mm-hmm. which will actually go and, you know, was it last episode or a
yeah.
couple episodes ago? It'll go through your entire site and check for spelling. And if it finds spelling errors, it'll report back, and you can actually click on it. It'll do a Java overlay and show you where that spelling error is mm-hmm. on your site. So that's...
Yeah, I think spelling is really important. I'm personally a terrible speller. I try to make so many rules in my head about spelling that I tend to make rules that contradict other rules, and in the end I get my rules confused. So it doesn't work out. But not... spelling correctly can really make you look unprofessional. So there, I mean, people who aren't really particular about spelling don't really notice misspellings and don't really care. Mm-hmm. But people that are particular about spelling, and there's a lot
it's
of
a
them out
deal.
There, they, it's a big deal.
It's like having a broken image.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Something.
Yeah. I mean, if you saw a broken image on a website, first thing you say is, oh, well, I'm that guy here. Is not pro. I'm out.
The other thing is SpellRS, their tagline is 90% of the websites have spelling mistakes.
Oh, so yeah. I mean,
something to check for sure. And if you have a tool like that, it makes it easy to do anyways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I even used, you know, the Firefox spell check and the WordPress spell check before I submit my post, and it still found spelling mistakes on my sites. And it's kind of embarrassing. And SpellRS is really good because it kind of tells you, like, well, it's smart. It says, this may be misspelled. It might not. It could be mm-hmm. slang that you spelled right. I don't know. But then there's, like the red flag list of, like, yeah, I know you misspelled these. And
right.
I also wonder if they sort of use, like an algorithm with, like, the more stuff they, you know, if they see more things that might be misspelled that actually are, that
yeah.
maybe then it starts integrating them into the, I
well,
know
yeah, like,
these are misspelled.
Like product names. It sees, it knows that you've typed it so many times that it thinks it's not a spelling mistake.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
So that's really cool.
Another one I notice I see a lot of sites do this sometimes is capitalization on headings.
Yeah.
You see a big inconsistency sometimes, you know, do you capitalize every word, or do you capitalize only the main words, like in a book title?
Yeah.
Or, you know, a lot of times, or sometimes one title will be all lowercase, and then you'll have a heading somewhere else, it'll have all the titles mm-hmm. capitalized in proper case.
Yeah.
Something to watch out for.
What is your system?
I do like a book title where you don't capitalize and.
Exactly.
You know, and
you don't
like
capitalize.
That.
Yeah. Yep.
I think it's words under three.
Yeah, like
or
two.
Something.
I'm not gonna capitalize two. Like, you know, going to
yeah.
the beach. I would not capitalize two or the.
I try to keep them capitalized though.
Yeah, and I'm very consistent about it. I'm kind of obsessive compulsive about things like that. So I'm glad that you do the same thing I do, and I'm usually really consistent.
On the same
it.
Line as that is on bolted lists. Sometimes people would put a period, and some people don't.
Yeah.
That it seems like a nitpicky thing, but it actually is. It's something that makes and breaks. I mean, if you've got a period on one of the bolted lists, but not all nine yeah. of the other ones, it looks weird.
Yeah, I would say I'm inconsistent from post to post as to what I do, but in that post, I am always consistent about stuff like that. Things like
yep.
that stick out to me like a sore thumb. I'm like, well, so what? The first bullet is a complete sentence. The others are not. What?
Yep.
I don't get it. And, you know,
It's not always just, is it a complete sentence? It's just that's the way.
Yeah, and
it's style.
In general, with like writing, especially on the web, I'm really flexible. Like, I don't care if people do stuff, but it needs to be consistent. You know, if you're consistently laissez-faire, that's I don't care. But if you can't make up your mind, then I'm like, well, what's your problem? I mean, you need to know yourself before you can write this stuff.
This next one, here's one that hit me when I was doing my launches. Check for hard-coded links and stuff like, you know, staging environments, you know, don't.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to me is I did something like the /, or whatever, to go back to the root, and it was, you got to watch that.
Yeah, and you start doing, you know, if you do subdomains and stuff, yep. You need to be careful with that.
What I ended up doing was I did like a base URL variable. And so then I can just change that. It changes on every, you know. Everything.
Yeah, the worst is if you develop like a WordPress theme locally, and then if you don't know the WordPress tags for like URLs and stuff, you know, you just kind of cheat. Yeah, so like my development URL is like, you know, localhost/blogtest or something like that. And then when I think it's done or whatever, and I forget to change that, and I upload it, you know, I'll do like links that are like dot, you know, just or /blogtest/whatever. And then when I upload it, you know, it's always broken because I didn't think about that. And that's when it's good to learn the WordPress tags because it'll do all that junk for you.
Yeah. Hidden copy. It's something to check. I mean, these are like something like your alt tags. For SEO reason, you don't want to leave just alt tags blank. Some people don't even have the alt tags on their images, and they're actually required.
Oh, are they? Standard. They're required for...
You won't be valid if you don't have them.
Traditional or transitional or strict?
Even transitional will.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
The reason is because it's for disabled. People want to be able to... Their voice reader needs to be able to read the image.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just there. They don't even know about it.
But, I mean, it helps with your SEO, so you might as well check the hidden parts of your site that you might not check, like your title tags. Well, that's not really hidden, but... But alt tags, the title tags on the links, JavaScript stuff. If you have like no JavaScript, like Flash.
Which is like the next big chunk is standards and validation. And the first one is accessibility. And that's a big one. Like Flash, how does that even work? I don't know. I mean, I honestly probably should try and experience that sometime. Like blindfold myself and try and use accessibility software to check things. But. Does Flash even do any accessibility at all? I don't even know.
Well, don't make your site absolutely need Flash to get what you need to get. So like if your blog or your site is about art, you know, the content is articles and information, that cannot be in Flash or you're in trouble. And even the navigation to get there can't be in Flash.
Yeah.
Unless you've got if there's no Flash, it can revert back to text links or something.
Yeah.
At least so you can get to the information.
Yeah. I hope no real blogger would ever put their content in Flash or something like that because immediately I would not view your website at all. That's just that I'd say that's a cardinal sin right there.
Screen resolution checking. Got to do that.
Some people just don't do this enough. And I mean, you have to. It sometimes they'll sit and tweak forever to make everything line up perfectly, not realizing that they're using like a relative width. And then, especially with the sort of burst of these huge widescreen monitors out on the market today.
Yeah. You've got an iMac here with a humongous monitor. Mm-hmm. If you're just going off and start making your page, you're like, oh, this looks good. And then you go on a laptop monitor or something. Yeah. You're like, oh, what's going on?
Well, that's a great example. It goes both ways, too. While, you know, sort of home monitors are getting bigger and cheaper, things like netbooks are becoming more popular, which have really small screens.
You've got to have everything.
We were trying to stream with Ustream right now, and their broadcast window is much taller than my netbook's resolution in any way, shape, or form. And I would think it would make sense that someone might want to Ustream with their netbook. It's like their portable computer with them. Why wouldn't you want to Ustream with that? Mm-hmm. But they didn't look at it.
And one of the tips I might as well share is I found a good width is about 960 pixels.
A lot of websites using that. That's kind of
they even have
right
a
now.
Framework that's named after 960 pixels. Yeah. It's called 960.
Yeah.
But yeah. The next one is security checks. A lot of times you'll make like an administration area for your website and you'll just forget to put a password on it or something. Or you'll have admin or something goofy just because you're developing on a local and you don't even think about that stuff really a lot of times.
Yeah, or you think like, why would anybody come to my website? But when what you don't realize is all these people have these spider bots doing it. It doesn't matter if anyone normal is going to your website. If someone had linked to it, they can try and find it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I use to check for that is a Perl script called Nikto.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It does a good quick check on it, mm-hmm. and it'll tell you some things that you might want to look at.
Little thing. Here's a good tip. Almost a lot of the security problems with websites is either cross-site scripting or user input sanitation problems.
Oh, of course.
And so what you have to kind of think of is, where can my user input stuff? Where am I asking them questions? Where can they insert stuff? And you need to check those places and whitelist and do validation on that stuff. Something to check.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so many problems come about because of user validation. I mean, I got caught with that trap on a website that I did a long time ago. I of course thought, you know, input validation, well, there's no forms on the web page, mm-hmm. you know, but I was using get variables and people were
technically, well, in your case, the user, you didn't have an user interface to interact with that feature input, that you had, but so you didn't think of it as a user.
Yeah, not at all. It's like, oh, I don't have forms. That's user input. But
technically,
I mean,
a user could change those values.
Yeah, I can go up to the URL and change a get value, and it caused a lot of problems.
It had a problem.
Yeah, I felt very thick-headed because I was being really bullheaded about it. I was like, I am not taking any information from the user, so this is bull. There's no way. It has to be the host's problem. And I told the guy to go talk to his host, you know, and demand that they figure out what happened. And then in the end, you know, you and I were kind of digging at it.
We actually ran that Nikto and we found that their PHP version was way out of date and a bunch of other
things. Yeah, and we were, you know, sending him fuming emails like, you need to fix your stuff. It's way out of date.
It was actually a much, much greater problem.
So simple. I mean, it was fixed by you creating a regular expression that kind of just looked at it to make sure there was nothing but regular characters.
Yeah, what I did was I whitelisted. What you do is you say, I will only accept this type of data. Everything else, reject.
Yeah. So make sure you check that out, especially before you start sending angry emails to hosts telling them that they're stupid and don't know what they're doing.
Another one along those lines is robots.txt. A lot of people use this as a security feature. You know, don't let robots into these areas, at least the robots that abide by robots.txt.
That's the other thing. I mean, yeah.
What they sometimes will end up doing is they'll create a block of good bots, you know, disallow. And you know, your site can be wiped off Google if you accidentally put the wrong stuff in there. A good tip for that is to go to the Webmaster Tools, the Google Webmaster Tools, and you can actually, Google will go check your robots.txt and say, oh, you know, I can get to these websites, or it'll say, these URLs are blocked. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, Google Webmaster Tools.
It's good one to good to check the robots.txt. Another one is image compression. Sometimes people will take an image in Photoshop and just save it and throw it up. And sometimes you can actually compress that image a lot more.
I'm gonna
without losing a whole lot of quality.
I'm gonna make a confession. That's totally me. I don't compress my JPEGs at all.
It's kind of a convenience thing. I mean, sometimes you're just like, you're lazy, and you're just like, I'm gonna save it and go. I've actually found that Photoshop, even if you use the save for the web and you tweak it out and you say, oh, this one's the best one, it's the most compressed without losing the most quality, it actually still doesn't compress it the most.
Mm-hmm.
There's programs like JPEGtran and PinCrush that will reduce the file size without doing any quality changes to that.
You know? Or we talked about a web app that did it too, that even had an API to
Zamzar.
Do it. No.
Zamzar does conversions of the files. Smush it.
Yep. Smush something like that. It was the episode where Paul Levesque came on. We'll link to it in the show notes, but we're idiots right now.
Minify and compress JavaScript and CSS. Did you have something?
I was going to say, for me, it's like not worth my time to try and resize it and get it lossless and stuff. I think bandwidth is cheap. Especially
you'll be thinking that.
Well, that's the thing is, that's the problem is right now I haven't really gone through that pain yet. I don't have anything that's bringing that many viewers.
We're using something like 3 gigs a day on Face Off Show.
Wow, that's hardcore.
But we're also serving big MP3s.
Yeah. We should probably Amazon S3 that sometime.
Yeah, it's good for now. If we increase our viewers or something.
Yeah.
Minifying and compressing JavaScript and CSS.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, because that doesn't change a whole lot, to be honest with you. And
well, okay, so in CSS, you know, to make it human readable, you space things out, tab them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is it actually every time you do a space, that's an extra character. It's more data.
Yeah.
Every time you do a tab, you know, it's more data. Now with things like compression, it's not that big of a deal if you have gzip compression on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always good still to just minify it. Basically what it does is it gets rid of any unnecessary CSS tags.
Mm-hmm. There are some, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and it takes all the spaces out, put everything on one line. That's about it.
We were actually, Mark and I were talking about this once and we actually found some things. So what we found that, counterintuitive to what you think, you actually want your CSS file to be referenced outside of your code, where you do the the source, you know, like
embedded CSS versus external.
You want it actually external for the CSS that stays the same. And so what you can do is you can find things like PHP programs or other ones that will compress it on the fly, so you can keep it human readable. Then it compresses it as the person requests it. Which you're thinking like, oh, why would you want to do that? That takes up CPU cycles. Well, if it's referenced externally, that program compresses it once and then it's cached.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you don't even have to, if you're really lazy, you don't even have to remember to compress your JavaScript or CSS every time you upload it. If you have it referenced externally, then you can use a processing program that does it on the fly, compresses it on the fly, and then spits it out to the user, which then it's cached.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you get like 10,000 new viewers, it's still cached or not, that still might bring your server to its knees, but there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
So that if you are lazy, I mean, I'll admit I'm pretty lazy about stuff like
that. You could do that, and then also, that's a good one. The other thing you could do is just make a copy of the CSS, minify it, and then keep your human-readable copy.
Whatever. Yeah, or I mean, if you have like the PHP script, you can just, once you upload it, same thing, you can just compress it to a different file that you're going to actually use, and you know, you don't have to like use some of these web apps that do it for you or anything like that.
But yeah, I mean, there's really no reason not to minify them.
Just, again, laziness.
Well, I mean, that reason.
I'll raise my hand and say that I don't do this. But I probably should. Someday I'll have programmers to do it for me. But who knows? What else?
You know, make sure you have a custom 404 page if you have one. You know, a favicon.
You know, it's funny. Little things like making a fave icon with all the web apps out there that do it these days is so easy. And it blows my mind how many people don't do it. And it's one of those things that, like, we were talking about earlier. I look at it and I immediately just go like, these people aren't serious.
Well, it used to not really be. I mean, a lot of people didn't use them a long time ago. But now it's like, you know, leaving your title blank.
Well, yeah, dedicated are you to your website? Mm-hmm. You can't take your little GIF logo and take 10 minutes to go to web app and make a fave icon and upload it. Come on. You know, some people, there are probably a lot of people out there that don't even notice fave icons. Like, you know, my mother is a great example. I don't even think she notices that stuff. But to people like you and I mean, that sticks out like a huge sore thumb. And we're just,
totally.
It just ruins sort of the immersion experience of a website. And that sounds kind of goofy to say, but, you know, it just kind of, if it's something that you and I notice, it means we're not paying attention to the actual website. We're paying attention to the stupid little details that we're noticing that we don't like.
Okay, there's a lot of stuff on this list. We only covered like a dozen or so.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the big, the big chunks, I guess we should hit it. You know, functional testing.
Create an XML sitemap.
Yeah.
For Google, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. You know, test your stuff. We talked about, again, in that episode with Paul Ovette, it's where we talked about
unit testing. With RSpec.
Yeah, pretty soon we're actually going to be having a talk with Eric Wendelin. He's going to be coming on the show. We're going to interview him about
Selenium,
which is final level.
It's the last level
of unit testing your website. So, you know, we're going to be helping you guys with that. We got some more information coming out. You know, performance. Try and make sure your stuff works good.
This is a good one. Turn off verbose error reporting. A lot of people when they're developing are doing that.
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense. And then, you know, they forget to turn it off.
Well, the thing about those is one little error can spit out much more personal information about your website or your web post than you ever want to let someone know about.
Yeah, totally.
Post-launch, it talks about, you know, marketing. You and I talk about marketing a lot. We think it's really important. There's a lot of free, easy marketing out there. Things like Twitter where if you're clever and genuine and don't abuse it, it's a great marketing tool. I'm following a lot of companies on Twitter, and some of them do it really good and some of them don't, so check it out. We're actually, Mark and I have been kind of auditing our Face Off Show Twitter tweets so that we can, you know, make sure that we're using that effectively and make it enjoyable enough that people actually want to follow us and we're not boring, and but we don't spam people. So we're looking at that. You know, Face Off fan pages now are a big thing that you can do. You know, it's just like make sure you submit to search engines was a big thing. Not as big as it used to be, because now it's really easy to, you know, if you have one person linked to you, it's usually...
demos.org is a really good one to get in there. That's the open source directory.
Yep.
Google actually, like, takes their... Everything they do, they'll just throw it on the Google Google search, no matter, like, no questions asked. They just throw it on.
Really?
Yeah, and they actually even use the description that Demos actually comes up with. Like, it's a human that goes to your site and actually describes it, and Google actually uses that as in their description in their search results. There's a meta tag that you can tell them not to use it, but they use that by default.
Yeah.
Unless they find something else. One of the things I wanted to mention that I forgot about that I just remember about the CSS we were talking about, there's CSS external in a CSS file, like style.css or something. And then you can actually embed CSS in your site. Mm-hmm. Now, normally people say, you know, oh, always do external. And that's pretty much true for most cases. It makes it easier to change. You can reference it to multiple pages and then, you know, you make a little change.
Mm-hmm.
If you get really advanced and really into optimizing your website, you can actually, there's certain times.
Yeah, we've talked, this is when you and I were really hashing it out.
Yeah, I got down and dirty and researched this a little bit, and there's certain times where we actually would use embedded, and it's when people are only going to see that page one time, basically. An example of it is the Google home, like the front of Google homepage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff in there that is embedded in the CSS. The reason is it's not another external file that the browser has to go get. It's just right in there, and then they can compress it.
Yeah.
The problem with it is not going to be cached. But what they do is they say that site's only probably going to be used once, and then you're going to use a search button on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like the first time visit.
Yeah.
You want that first page to load really fast.
Yeah. Less calls to your web server because, I mean, every time you load an external file like that, it's another HTTP call that your server has to process. So you're trying to, you know, for websites that are only going to be viewed once, you want to minimize the call. So if they're going to view the website once and then never, ever come back, you want just one call. If they're going to keep coming back and browse around for a bit, then you want to make that extra first call. Because then those CSS and JavaScript files will be cached, and then doesn't have to make that call again.
Yeah, so there's certain times. Google, for an example, if you go look at their source code, they do it in certain parts of their website, and Yahoo does as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, Yahoo has in their developer section, they talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
About when you would embed it versus the other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like that, the Yahoo thing gets so deep in optimizing your website. I mean, we talked about like Y-Slow and stuff. You can just dig into that forever.
I just wanted to mention that because it was bugging me.
Why I let hardcore people like you figure all that stuff out and then tell it to me, because I'm not. It just makes my eyes kind of glaze over. But then you
remember that Dig article that we talked about in the previous podcast. It said, don't worry about that stuff because you're going to have stuff like Memcache and this and that. And
yeah.
If you get that big, then you can start paying people to do this and that, you know? So it's kind of like, quit worrying about it.
I wish I had to worry about these problems, because that means you're doing something right and you've got a lot of visitors. True. And that's when it gets really exciting, because it's like make or break. If you don't fix it and it gets too slow, you're going to start losing visitors. So then it's time to really crank and think about that.
Definitely.
But if I have that problem, then I'm doing something right and I'll be glad. But right now, I got to be honest with you, I don't have to worry about that too much.
All right. Let's hit the next topic real quick.
Okay.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but I know we'll just try to get this one in.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's just, this will be kind of a quick, fun thing that we're talking about. Mark and I are participating in the Pro Blogger 31 Day to Build a Better Blog Challenge.
We've talked about Pro Blogger in our show before. It's, you know, a great resource if you're starting a blog, or even any website, really.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff applies to it.
I mean, a blog is something that gets pigeonholed a lot, but there's a lot of websites out there that aren't specifically blogs that really are just classified as blogs.
Just a website that you're putting out content.
I mean, you and I don't really think of our blogs as like, oh, we're starting a blog. To you and I, it's a website where we're releasing articles.
Exactly.
It's really cool. Mark and I, it's been going on for about a half a month now. Mark and I really kept up on it the first couple weeks. We've been slowing down. Some of the challenges are harder to do. Like one of them is like watch a first-time viewer to your blog, see what they do. We haven't really had a chance to do that yet, but it's a really good resource. We signed up for it. What are some of the great things that you learned, Mark, about this challenge thus far?
Well, one of them I kind of knew is list posts. I was like, you know, if you go to Dig or Reddit or whatever, 90% of the content is just a list post.
Yeah, that is such a slippery slope, though. I mean, we've talked about that.
Well, he even says in his blog, he's like, I mean, you're going to, people say they hate him, blah, 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 but they work. I mean, it was an instant success. I had the most visitors ever on my site when I made the list post.
Yeah.
So
it just blew up.
There was a one where it was about reading about your blog, and he had like all the top articles he thought that most people should read about. I learned all kinds of stuff, like what the best time is to retweet something.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
A really interesting challenge that Mark and I did together was go to the mall and observe people. And I mean, you're like, well, a mall, what am I going to learn there? But a lot of it is just making you critically think about things that you don't normally do. Like you go to the mall, you watch people shove their face full of food and buy trendy clothes. But this, you know, it had like sort of a set of questions that you should look at and stuff. And Mark and I really actually got some insights into our website as to what things that we should do. Like one of them was, right now people are really looking for cheap or free things. The economy is kind of slowing down. So, one of Mark's websites called Nick's Tutor, is great in a couple ways because maybe people might be looking to save money by trying out Linux, instead of paying for Windows. I know even my sister got an Asus EPC with Linux on it, and I thought, oh, great, that's going to be a mess. But she's really liking it thus far. So,
awesome.
You know, something like Nick's Tutor is really good. It's also people are looking for free help, free solutions right now instead of, you know, paying for it. So
do they use GNOME on Asus?
Yeah.
Really? So yeah. It's like their version of Linux, some distro that they
I believe so. Cool. I think so, yeah. It's
And even your site, games on a budget, cheap games. There's some really good games out there that are cheap. You don't have to pay $50 for a game.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
so, World of Goo was like $10, right?
Yeah, we went to GameStop and watched, and they have these bins in the middle with this big red sign that says like game clearance. And first thing Mark and I did, we walk in the store, start digging through the clearance bin. We kind of walked around.
Everybody else was digging through them too.
Everybody else, first thing you do.
No one was checking out the new game.
Yeah, I mean,
all into the clearance stuff. The one guy at the counter was buying a used game.
Yeah.
People are just not buying, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We didn't see a lot of money getting exchanged.
I mean, there's a lot of other things. You would just be surprised what you could find out at the mall. Like, I think I'm pretty into the gaming scene. I really haven't been paying much attention to the Nintendo DS. But the Nintendo DSi was just launched, and there I saw, you know, three people go in and buy a DSi while we were there for like, you know, half an hour. It's selling like hotcakes. So, you know, anyways, back to the topic. 31 Days to Build a Better Blog Challenge. I would suggest anyone check it out. You can go back and see the history of it and try it out your time. You don't have to do it every day like we are, but sometimes it's a great way to get, you know, your website ramped up.
I've been blogging for over a year now, and I've been listening to Pro Blogger a lot, and this is like taking everything that he's been teaching for the last like X amount of years. He's had the assignment like 4 or 5 years. And it's really like a concentration of, you know, all the best stuff. So if you're starting a blog or whatever, I mean, it's like concentrated knowledge about how to build a great website or blog.
And it gives you like a homework assignment every day. So it's like fun. It's like one every day, you know, Mark and I, we go to work in the morning. And we're like, ooh, what do you think the Build a Better Blog Challenge is going to be today? And then we, you know, we try and get it done every day. Can't do it. But I mean, it's a good resource. I really like it. And hopefully it's worked for you. I haven't been as strict about it as I should have been, but it's been bringing some traffic to your website. I mean, definitely. You had one day that was just explosive.
Yeah.
So check it out. Just put your heart into your content. Try and do good. I mean, Mark and I, we talk about it a lot. One of the things that we do is we always focus about the technology side, and it's so easy to implement technology like a blog, you know, and get a good theme on it, make it look nice and stuff. But in the end, the only way to do it is to have good content. You've got to sit down and you've got to hammer out some content that people mm-hmm. will enjoy and think about it critically. Don't a lot of people, you know, think, oh, I'll just, you know, fire a blog about the internet, make money. Hooray, I'm making money. And it just doesn't work that way. So think about it. This is a good way to step back and take a really hard look at your stuff without, you know, feeling, you know, silly about it.
Yep.
All right, Mark. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind our viewers that you can subscribe to our show by going to faceoffshow.com/feed. If you have suggestions or comments, you can email us at studio@faceoffshow.com. Reply to us on Twitter @faceoffshow.
Send us an email. Send us audio.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So leave a comment on our blog or on the show's website. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys. And we thank you for listening. See you next week.